Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Mario Ritter, Jr. This program is designed for English learners, so we speak a little slower and we use words and phrases especially written for people learning English.
Coming up on the show, Jill Roberts brings us the Health and Lifestyle Report. She tells about a new study on the incidence of diabetes worldwide. The researchers say more than 800 million adults have the disease, and they say more than half of people over 30 who have the disease are not receiving treatment for it. We also hear from Brian Lynn. He reports on Microsoft's effort to expand its AI offerings with personal agents designed to take over different human processes. And we close the show with our lesson of the day. Andrew Smith and Jill Robbins teach us about how to express habitual past actions in English. But first, I have a story on some ancient footprints found in Kenya and what they mean to the paleontologists and other scientists studying them. Scientists say ancient footprints left in wet dirt on a Kenyan lakeside suggests that two early human ancestors were neighbors about 1.5 million years ago. Two separate species made the sets of footprints within a matter of hours, or at most days, said paleontologist Louise Leakey, a writer of the research published recently in the journal Science. Paleontologists study fossils to learn about the history of life on Earth. Scientists already knew from earlier fossil finds that these two extinct lines of human development, called Homo erectus and Paranthropus boisei, lived about the same time in the Turkana Basin. But dating fossils is not exact. It's plus or minus a few thousand years, said paleontologist William Harcourt Smith of Lehman College and the American Museum of Natural History in New York. He was not involved in the study. Yet, with fossil footprints, there's an actual moment in time preserved, he said. It's an amazing discovery. Researchers found the fossil footprints in 2021 in what is today Kubafora, Kenya, said Leakey, who is based at Stony Brook University in New York. Study co-writer Kevin Hatala is a paleoanthropologist at Chatham University in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. He said the two species likely knew of each other's existence, whether they left the prints at the same time or a day or two apart. They probably saw each other, probably knew each other was there, and probably influenced each other in some way, Hatala said. Scientists were able to tell the difference between the two species because of the shape of the footprints. The shape of each informed researchers about the structure of the foot and how it was being used at the time. Homo erectus appeared to be walking similarly to how modern humans walk, striking the ground heel first, then moving weight over the ball of the foot and toes, and pushing off again. The other species, which was also walking upright, was moving in a different way from anything else we've seen before, anywhere else, said co-writer Erin Marie Williams-Hatala, a human development anatomist at Chatham. Among other details, the footprints suggest greater ability of movement in their big toe compared to Homo erectus or modern humans, said Hatala. Our common primate ancestors probably had hands and feet fit for grasping branches. But over time, the feet of human ancestors developed to permit walking upright, researchers say. The new study adds to a growing amount of research that suggests the change to walking on 2 feet did not happen at a single moment in a single way. Instead, there may have been a number of ways that early humans learned to walk, run, and slide on prehistoric muddy hills. It turns out there are different gait mechanics, different ways of being bipedal, said Harcourt Smith. I'm Katie Weaver.
Microsoft is expanding its artificial intelligence AI tool offerings to include personal agents, which are designed to take over different human processes. The American software company said the new offerings are designed to help users complete certain business activities with little or no human involvement. The agents are expected to be offered to some users starting in the coming weeks. A full release is expected sometime next year. Microsoft has said its agents are designed to expand on so-called chatbots. A chatbot is an AI tool that can work by itself to produce human-level writing or discussion. Such systems, also known as generative AI, can also produce images and videos based on short text descriptions. While chatbots perform some functions on their own, they also depend heavily on humans to operate and guide them. The idea behind AI agents is to give them the ability to take over whole business processes with little or no guidance from people. In a statement last month, Microsoft said it was preparing for a world where every organization would have a collection of AI agents to perform different business activities. In another statement issued last week, the company said the agents being developed are designed to operate around the clock to ease the workload of human workers. Examples of agent duties include processing customer orders or returns and examining shipping records to prevent errors. Microsoft has moved quickly to offer AI technologies to everyday users of its business software products. The methods are largely based on models built by AI developer OpenAI, creator of the ChatGPT chatbot. Microsoft has invested about $13 billion in OpenAI. Microsoft's chief marketing officer, Jared Spataro, said the public should think of agents as the new apps for an AI-powered world. The company added that its customers will be able to use its Copilot Studio service to create their own AI agents to meet specific needs. Copilot is Microsoft's existing AI chatbot tool. In addition, the company said it has introduced 10 ready-to-use agents to carry out routine business activities. Charles LaManna is the corporate vice president of business and industry for Copilot. He told Reuters news agency, "The idea is that Copilot is the user interface for AI." He added, "Every employee will have a Copilot, their personalized AI agent, and then they will use that Copilot to interface and interact with the sea of AI agents that will be out there." In an online explanation of the AI tools, Microsoft said, "Instead of just assisting you, agents can work alongside you or even on your behalf. This could include a range of things, from responding to customer questions to more complex or multi-step assignments," the company added. The abilities of AI agents remain limited for now, but ongoing development of the tools has raised concerns about certain risks linked to the technology. Microsoft officials have said the company had developed responsible AI guidelines to protect users from possible security or privacy problems. Other big technology companies also aim to develop such agents. These include Salesforce, NVIDIA, Google, and Oracle. Industry experts have said the tools could provide companies with an easier path to earn money from the billions of dollars they are investing in AI systems. I'm Brian Lynn.
VOA Learning English has launched a new program for children. It is called Let's Learn English with Anna. The new course aims to teach children American English through asking and answering questions and experiencing fun situations. For more information, visit our website, learningenglish.voanews.com.
A new study reports that more than 800 million adults have diabetes worldwide. And more than half of those aged over 30 who have the condition are not receiving treatment. Diabetes is a disease in which your blood sugar level is too high. If untreated, it can damage the heart, blood vessels, nerves, and other organs. The study, recently published in the publication Lancet, found that around 828 million people aged 18 and older had diabetes worldwide in 2022. Among those 30 and older, the study said 445 million, or 59%, were not receiving treatment. The study was done by the NCD Risk Factor Collaboration and the World Health Organization, or WHO. It is the first worldwide evaluation based on more than 1,000 studies involving more than 140 million people. The WHO estimated that the number of people living with diabetes worldwide rose from 200 million in 1990 to about 830 million in 2022. The study's researchers say the increase has been caused largely by rising cases in low- and middle-income countries. Treatments in those countries have not kept up with the rise, while the situation has improved in some higher-income countries. WHO Director General Dr. Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus said in a statement that the increase shown in the study was shocking. To bring the global diabetes epidemic under control, countries must urgently take action, he said. Those actions should include policies supporting healthy diets and physical activity, as well as health systems that can prevent, identify, and treat the condition. Jean-Claude Mbanya is a professor at the University of Yaoundé 1 in Cameroon. He said that in parts of sub-Saharan Africa, only 5 to 10% of those estimated to have diabetes were getting treatment. He added that treating diabetes, either with insulin or drugs, can be costly. A huge number are at risk of serious health complications, he said. Some of the largest improvements, 25 to 37 percentage points, happened in countries in Latin America, Central and Western Europe, Canada, South Korea, Russia, Seychelles, and Jordan. The WHO says the number of deaths caused by diabetes has been increasing since 2000. In 2021, the disease was the direct cause of 1.6 million deaths. The health agency says symptoms of diabetes may happen suddenly or take many years to be noticed. They include feeling very thirsty, needing to urinate more often than usual, blurred vision, feeling tired, and losing weight. The best way to prevent or delay the illness, the WHO says, is to make lifestyle changes. For example, keeping a healthy body weight, staying active with at least 150 minutes of exercise each week, eating a healthy diet and avoiding sugar and saturated fat, and not smoking tobacco. I'm Jill Robbins. And now it's time for the lesson of the day on the Learning English Podcast. My name is Jill Robbins, and I'm joined by Andrew Smith. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, Jill. Our lesson is based on our video series, Let's Learn English. The series shows Ana Mateo in her work and life in Washington, D.C. Here's Ana introducing herself.
Hello, my name is Ana Mateo.
On today's podcast lesson, we're going to listen to Lesson 16 of Level 2 of Let's Learn English. This lesson repeats, many times, two ways we can talk about things we did or experienced on a regular or habitual basis in the past.
A habitual basis means things that happened on a kind of regular schedule or that happened very often.
For example, if you go to school 5 days a week, that is a habitual action.
Now, here are the two ways we can talk about habitual actions feelings, or states of being in the past. The first way uses the modal would. The second way uses the two words used to.
The best way to learn to use them is to hear some examples. Listen to the beginning of lesson 16.
Hi, Kaveh. Let's go to lunch.
Ooh, I know a great place. When I first started working here, I would go every day.
Great. Oh, no.
What's wrong?
I lost my key. I just had it this morning.
You should check the lost and found office.
Great idea. Where is it?
Oh, it used to be across from the cafeteria, but now it's down in the basement next to the elevators. It's really hard to find.
The lost and found is hard to find. That's funny.
It is.
You can hear the first habitual action when Kaveh says,
"Ooh, I know a great place. When I first started working here, I would go every day."
And then Kaveh talks about another situation that existed for a period of time in the past.
Oh, it used to be across from the cafeteria.
Here, the words used to be just mean the same thing as the verb was.
There are some small differences in how we use the modal would and the verb used to when we describe habitual past actions or experiences. Here's Professor Bhatt explaining these differences.
I hope Anna can find the lost and found office. Used to and would describe something that happened repeatedly in the past. Kaveh uses would when he says,
"When I first started working here, I would go every day."
There are two differences between used to and would. Number one, we use would only when we say the time period first. Number two, for verbs like be, think, feel, see, and understand, we can only use used to. Kaveh says,
"It used to be across from the cafeteria."
Thanks, Professor Bhatt. That is a helpful explanation. Verbs such as be, think, feel, see, and understand are more like states of mind or states of being rather than actions, such as the verbs go, eat, play, and so on. Now, listen to Jill and I have a conversation about our past. Listen for how we use would and used to.
Andrew, do you have any special memories of something you would do with your family when you were young?
I do. Yes, I do. So one example is from the age of 11 until about the age of 18, I would go with my father every year to the Great Smoky Mountains National Park. That's in the southeastern United States. And we would hike up a mountain called Mount LeConte. At the top of the mountain, there were cabins where we would spend the night. And I remember I would get up very early in the morning and go watch the sunrise from the top of the mountain. Those are special memories. How about you, Jill?
My family used to travel around the country in a Volkswagen bus. When I was little, all seven of us would sleep in this big blue tent. My dad once said he wanted us to see all parts of the country, so we went there and camped. I think that's where I got my love for traveling to new places and meeting people from other places.
That sounds so great. I think I would have loved to do that. Maybe I'll get a van when I'm older and try to do something similar.
Now let's hear more from Lesson 16 of Level 2 of Let's Learn English. Anna goes to an office to try to find her lost key. The person in the office thinks Anna wants to find the key to happiness instead of a key to her door. In this part, you will hear many examples of the words used to. when the speakers describe habitual actions and feelings from the past.
Come in. I am Serenity.
Hi, Serenity. I'm Anna.
Please, sit down. How can I help you?
I lost something very important.
Shh. I already know. You need help.
Yes, I need help finding the key.
You need to find the key. The key that will give you happiness.
Yes, finding this key will make me very happy.
First, Anna, let me tell you a little bit about myself.
Okay.
I used to be a very important person with a very important job. I made a lot of money.
I mean a lot. Wow. Good for you.
No. It was bad for me. I lost the most important thing, the key. You've lost it too, haven't you, Anna? Haven't you?
I guess. So how does this work? Do I have to fill out a form or something? Or
No forms. Just answer this one question. As a child, what did you used to do to feel happy?
When I was little, I used to sing all the time with my family. Those were good times.
Singing is so joyful. I used to sing. But now that I started my business, I've just been too busy. Too busy. Anna, why don't you sing again?
I sing everywhere. I sing in the office, I sing on the metro, I sing in the elevators, I sing on the escalators, I sing in the bathroom. Serenity, serenity, I really need to find my key. Yeah.
Yes, we need to find the key to happiness.
No, I just need to find the key to my apartment.
I used to know, but now I don't. Do you, Anna?
I don't know. I think I left it in the ladies' room. You know, this isn't the lost and found, is it?
It could be the lost and found. I'm lost. And I used to find joy for people. I used to find joy.
You know, this is a bad time for you. I'll find the lost and found myself. Bye. Thanks.
I used to find joy. I used to find joy. I used to find joy.
I found my key.
I used to find joy.
Oh, the sad woman in the office used to find joy. Well, hopefully she will find it again soon.
Listeners, what are some things you used to do when you were younger? What would you do when you played with your friends? Write to us and let us know.
You can send your email to learningenglish@voanews.com.
Remember, you can always find us on Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. Thanks for listening. I'm Dr. Jill.
And I'm Andrew Smith.
That's our show for today, but join us again tomorrow to keep learning English on the Voice of America. I'm Katie Weaver.
And I'm Mario Ritter Jr.